Blog Talk Radio.
Wordsmith is on the air.
Without stories, we become less than human, I think.
The people.
I actually researched and wrote at the same time.
The books.
When I started writing this book, it was about 1996.
The business of writing.
And ultimately led me to her agent, who became my agent.
This is Wordsmith, brought to you by Florida Monthly Magazine. And now, your host, Kate Sullivan.
I'm Kate Sullivan with Wordsmitten, and it's about the books.
And in today's segment of About the Books, we're talking with Karen Long, who represents the annual awards event to be held this week in Cleveland, honoring five authors, and it's the 78th annual Anisfield Wolf Book Award. It may be something that people have not heard of, but they will be paying attention to it soon, because not only do they offer authors a prize of $10,000, but beyond that, they have a history of having authors who have won the award to go on and win other prizes, including the Nobel. So we're going to be talking about the winners of this year's award in a few minutes, and we want to welcome Karen to About the Books, and we're glad you're joining us to listen to this particular segment of our show. Tell us, Karen, about this enduring event, why it's just becoming a beloved addition to the literary world, and what you do to organize this book award ceremony.
Kate, thank you so much for having me on to talk about what is one of the cultural gems of the Midwest. It has importance, I think, for two reasons. In the beginning, it has to flow from the jury, and our jury is Henry Louis Gates, Jr. The Harvard Scholar is our chair. He is assisted selecting these books every year, with the only guide being excellence in books that look at racism and diversity, with Joyce Carol Oates, the novelist, Simon Shema, the historian, Steven Pinker, the psychologist also at Harvard, and Rita Dove, who grew up in Akron, Ohio, and is a former U.S. Poet Laureate.
And so that's a remarkable jury. Joyce Carol Oates, her work has always been astonishing. But you just joined the Cleveland Foundation in January. So what kind of challenges do you have facing you to bring this particular award, which, you know, as we say, has been kind of behind the curtain for a while? What are your challenges?
It's a challenge of visibility, but I find that I don't need to sell, because the books themselves have a track record of excellence, and the fact that our jury has sat and done this since 96 together is unparalleled, really, in the awarding of modern prizes. I look at the prizes as sort of an interesting dilemma. Before Alfred Nobel decided to sanitize his name with the Nobel...
dynamite is such a risky business, isn't it?
His fortune made as a bomb maker. We didn't think in terms of who won what, but now I know people who've got Pulitzers who tell me they know the first line of their obituary, which will be Connie Schultz, who won a Pulitzer Prize for her journalism at the Plain Dealer in Cleveland. And so we tend now to think in this framework, and therefore awards proliferate. So every time somebody's rich uncle dies. So I am trying to rise from the white noise of all that contention for attention and let people, as your tag says, know about the books and be about the books.
Talk to us about the first thing that you did when you walked in and tell us what your position title is.
Sure. I am managing the Anisfield Wolf Book Awards for the Cleveland Foundation, which is the first community foundation in the world. There are now 1,700. And what happened was, this shy philanthropist named Edith Anisfield Wolf decided to honor first her father and then her husband with a prize that looked at books that further the conversation about race. It's right there in her will. And she did this in 1935, in the teeth of Jim Crow, when it wasn't the convention to think about. And she took 5 years between her father's death and establishing the award to decide how she was going to do this. When Edith set it up in 1935, most of the scholarship was around issues of black and white. And one of the great exciting things about the Annisfield Wolf Book Awards today is that has stretched to include the way we look at the other in terms of disability, transgender, ethnicity, global concerns around religion, so that the net swings very wide, but the emphasis is always about our discomfort in some of these topics. So it's not only a feel-good award, it's a think-hard award.
One of the things that was remarkable, and I'm so glad that you sent me the books to take a look at, I began reading The Yellow Birds by Kevin Powers, which, of course, is one of the books that has won the award for
many
this year.
Many awards, too.
Just,
yes.
He's remarkable. And this particular novel, The Yellow Birds, is a raw poetic arsenal of such cutting imagery where death is incidental and friendship is ethereal. And I was swept away by his language, and of course he starts the book with a cadence, The Yellow Birds, which is a
yes.
military cadence. And there's a sense of song, there is a sense of lyric that abides within this book that I was just enchanted. I was not aware of him as a writer,
is his very first book, Kate, so that's why. It's remarkable, as you say, that his very first book is at this level of achievement. And
well,
he did
get his MFA from the University of Texas at Austin, which, of course, ZZ Packer, who has been on our show and in our literary magazine, is teaching there. And I was just delighted to see the quality coming out of Austin. Most people, of course, know that Iowa is the holy grail of MFA, of writing programs, but
correct.
At
least in reputation,
a very serious candle up in their shadow.
Indeed, and I think that this is such an illustrative book because it's a story of two young men in Iraq, goes from stateside and back to the battle and back and forth, and one could question, what does this book have to do with diversity? It seems like a stretch, but what it is a gateway into military culture. And for all of us who haven't served our country in the military, the majority of people these days, it's a key to that kingdom that's eviscerating and yet beautiful because the language is beautiful.
His writing is extraordinary. And then with Laird Hunt, who has won the award for his book, Kind One, one of the things that he references in his book is one of my favorite writers, Edward P. Jones, who has been a lovely guest on our show and is absolutely adorable, and his writing is wonderful. And I wondered, when you read Kind One, did you see any additional nuance, any additional references between Kind One by Laird Hunt and with Edward P. Jones, The Known World?
Grand question, Kate. Thank you. And I really had to rely on Laird, who is one of the subtlest writers I know. He's on an explosive topic, but you have to pay such close attention to his beautiful, almost Civil War-era language. It reminded me a bit of Cold Mountain in the cadences. But what he told me was, on page 18 of The Known World is somewhat of a throwaway paragraph, though of course none of them are thrown away, in which Edward P. Jones references a pair of sisters in slavery who turned tables on the woman who owned them. And from that germ, Laird, who's very interested in that slippery area between oppressor and oppressed, amplified it into the story Kind One, which I recommend to all your listeners.
I'm thrilled with it. He is eloquent in the 1800 dialect, and the vernacular and the colloquial language is wonderful. And of course, nobody, as far as I'm concerned, can surpass Edward P. Jones. But again, he holds a very sharp pencil Laird Hunt's new book, Kind One, and I was just amazed because beyond the book itself, the publisher is Coffee House Press, and their website is coffeehousepress.org. I was just delighted to see what their mission statement was, as well as seeing what the mission statement was for this woman who created this extraordinary and enduring event that you're now a part of. I mean, her father was an immigrant who came to Cleveland from Vienna and created his own industry, his own garment industry, and built it up during a time, you know, 1929 was a very, very tough time for the United States, obviously tougher than this recent Great Recession that we've been through. But how is this foundation supported? Who's in charge of keeping this going? Who do you rely on when you have questions about the next step for this event?
Well, the finances are taken care of aggressively and gorgeously by Edith's, again, own prescience. Originally, the awards were sponsored by the Saturday Review, but in 1960, which turned out to be 3 years before she died, she drew up her will and she decided to move the prize under the care of the Community Foundation. And it took it seriously and grew her funds so that the award and the prizes could grow. But also, had it stayed with the Saturday Review, which went belly up in 1982, who knows what would have happened to the Annisfield Wolf Book Awards. I do want to dial back, Kate, if I could, just to one observation about Edith and her father. And it's clear
that
we'll
do that in just a moment. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Thank you very much.
Don't go away. There's more about the people, the books, and the business of writing as Wordsmitten continues in just a moment.
Seabreeze Manor. Reserve your weekend retreat today. You'll wake up to a seaside breakfast, stroll from an outdoor patio overlooking waters of Florida's Gulf Coast to search for shells, paddle a kayak, ride a bicycle through a quaint village. Seabreeze Manor. Call 727-343-4445. That's 727-343-4445. Or visit seabreezemanor.com. Reserve your weekend retreat today.
And now, Wordsmitten continues.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Karen Long, who has just joined the Cleveland Foundation to help them with their event, which is a 78-year-old event and has a remarkable history of wonderful literary achievement. These authors who are currently going to be awarded a $10,000 prize this week for the 78th Annual Annisfield Wolf Book Awards include Laird Hunt, whose new novel is titled Kind One, and that's out under Coffee House Press, and their website is coffeehousepress.org. Kevin Powers, brand-new novelist, debut novelist, and as our standard listeners know, our fans know, we do support debut novelists because we don't think that they get enough visibility, and his new book, The Yellow Birds, is stunning. Eugene Gloria, who has written My Favorite Warlord and is a terrific book of poetry. Andrew Solomon, who's written some nonfiction that is astonishing. And we're going to be talking about that in a second. But right now, Karen, you wanted to mention something about the founder of the award.
I did, because she's such an intriguing figure. And there's so little known about her. She was described as publicity shy in Cleveland when she was occasionally covered in the papers. But one thing we do know about her is she was an only child, and in 1901, when she was 12, her father had already started his philanthropic work, and he invited her on Saturdays to spend time in his office thinking about what they could do with the money together. And if you put yourself into that time machine, this was 19 years before the 19th Amendment was certified, and therefore before women had the right to vote. And here is a father saying to a young girl, your mind, your opinion, your insights, even as a 12-year-old, are powerful to me. And she made a comment in 1943 to the Old Cleveland News that my father treated me like a boy. And that's not enough to go on. But what I love about that is it's a little hint that she had W.E.B. Du Bois' double vision, that she could see the world through a couple of lenses. And maybe through her experiences of the conventional thinking about women, she had an empathy toward African Americans too.
I think it's interesting that the award has endured from the early days that she decided that she wanted to create this prize. The prize originally was $1,000, which, of course, in the late 20s, early 30s was an astonishing amount to give
it
to someone. And the WPA, of course, was hiring artists and having them paint walls and do wonderful things, but this was the first time that somebody gave an award strictly for diversity, and that's unusual. I mean, we're in Florida. We broadcast out of New York, but we're in Florida, and we've just had the Zimmerman Tyrone Martin trial, which to me was an abomination. But where are we these days with diversity, and how is the Annisfield Wolf Award helping to clear the air, helping to get people to understand collegial, the old saying with Rodney King in Los Angeles after he was beaten, why can't we all just get along?
Mm-hmm.
What is this mission doing to help move things forward?
By placing these books in the conversation, Kate, I think that George Zimmerman might have behooved himself of some great Annisfield Wolf reading and been a different kind of person. It's true.
We just live in that hope.
He
seems to be an obtuse individual.
He does, but as Andy Jackson used to say, God's not finished with me yet. And so every time someone picks up a book, I think there is, of course, the chance of some enlightenment or some insight. Zora Neale Hurston's biggest payday of her life, a Floridian, was when she won the Annisfield Wolf Book Award for her memoir. And today, because we have people like Andrew Solomon, who does this magisterial look in Far From the Tree, our nonfiction winner, at 10 categories of people in their most intimate setting, which is family. So children who have disabilities, who are deaf, who have autism or schizophrenia, or who've committed a serious crime. And he looks at these families and their sense of otherness. And I found as a parent reading this book, Kate, that even though some of the family situations were exotic to me, I felt these depth charges of similarity to situations I'd had with my own children. And in each of these groups, the people who had a child who, say, had committed a crime or had been conceived in rape, very hard topics, or were a prodigy and very strange to the family, they form community and become active in many cases and have a situation where, I'll just read you the sentence I think Andrew wrote so beautifully in his introduction, where...
And before you do that, let's just let our listeners know that you're talking about the title of It's Far From the Tree, and it's Andrew Solomon out by Scribner last year. So go ahead if you have a
Thank
quote
you.
That you'd like to read.
He says, this book's conundrum is that most of the families described here have ended up grateful for experiences they would have done anything to avoid.
I read that sentence, and I thought it was wonderful. I also loved, he covers in depth the pathways through the brain, and as you mentioned, he covers families who are challenged by Down syndrome and by schizophrenia, and I loved the section on prodigies. My brother was a prodigy. My brother was a musical prodigy. I can't even say the word. Prodigy, and he studied with Segovia when he was 16 years old. He was so brilliant as a musician, as a composer. And one of the things that he said later on in life was that talent was a curse. And I came across this particular sentence in Andrew Solomon's book, again, which is titled Far From the Tree, and the sentence is, brilliance can be as much of an impediment to intimacy as any developmental anomaly, and the health and happiness of families of prodigies do not outstrip those of others in this book. So he's saying that the brain, and he delves deeply into things that are so fun for me to follow. I could not put the book down because the synapse, as far as I'm concerned, the synapse controls so much of the inner workings of our minds. So how did the jury decide that Andrew Solomon's book, which is for some people not an easy read, and is it's a treatise. It's an amazing book, and it's more than 800 pages, if I recall.
Kate,
just how did they choose his particular book? It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. But
I got the permission I got the permission of juror Steven Pinker, the psychologist, to cite his letter to the rest of the jurors after he read this universe-changing book for the reader. And Steve said that he works extensively in the deaf community doing experimentation on what happens to the language centers of the brain when one isn't able to hear. And he also works with transgendered families. And he said in both those communities, he knew families that stayed up all night reading and discussing the sections because they're so nuanced and scientifically rigorous. For him, this is a science book, as well as an interview with these 300 families who made it into the book, and that he was agog at how beautifully Andrew, as a journalist, captured these realms and the ethical complexity of living in them. It's just, people see the book and it looks a little thick, but I would buttonhole people on street corners and say, this is the one. That's how passionately I feel about it.
Yeah, it's not daunting at all. Start with any chapter and you won't be able to put it down. Doesn't matter which chapter.
A friend of mine is already teaching it at medical school, and she's breaking it down one chapter per month, and which is perfect.
It's great. It's great for anybody who's on a university campus and wants to understand the twinings of the mind. Talk to us about what goes on at the event this week.
Thanks. We have a gala of 1,100 people. The tickets go within days. The tickets are free, but we have only a certain number of seats, and it is the premier literary event in Cleveland every fall when we have Henry Louis Gates Jr. as our MC. And, books about race and diversity sound a little bit like broccoli, but Skip Gates makes them dessert. We have a kind of a call and response with an audience of 1,100 people leaning in for hard books. And Arnold Ramperstad won our Lifetime Achievement Award last year. He's a brilliant biographer, emeritus professor at Stanford University. I happened to be sitting next to him because I was covering it for the newspaper in Cleveland at the time. And he turned to me and he said, "What's going on in Cleveland that hundreds of people show up for these hard books?" And part of it is the tradition. You want to be seen at this event if you are engaged in literature and sometimes politics, because people who run the corporations and the big churches make it a point to be here. So it's a happy event at which each of the authors takes the podium in turn, and it's hard to predict where the magic will happen, but invariably there are gasps and call-outs, and I kind of think of it as having church in the old African-American tradition.
It is the church of the literary enlightenment, and we are thankful for that. Where is the event held in Cleveland?
Right downtown at Playhouse Square in the Ohio Theater.
And how long is it, and when does it start, and when does it end? And, of course, I'm saying this knowing that fully understanding that it is sold out at this stage.
I wish you could come, Kate. And if in 2014 or 1 year you find yourself in the neighborhood, you can be my guest. Curtain is up.
Thank you for the offer. I thank you for the invitation. It's lovely. I don't
know
whether I can do that or not, but you know, I have a husband and cats, and just to jump on a plane and go places. I just got back from the book expo in Manhattan at the Javits, and so I'm grounded for a while. But it's a lovely invitation. Thank you so much. So, talk to us about who gets to be a sponsor for this event. How are people engaged to add to this event, to bring enhancement and
fun and enjoyment? That's such a good question. And one of the things we're keen to do is keep it close to the ground. I really think the next Langston Hughes is out there, perhaps in a Cleveland classroom. And the award isn't even particularly beautifully known here, so that there are teachers who haven't heard of it. And while the content is pretty challenging, there are students who are ready for it. One of our co-presenters is Case Western Reserve University, which has its own Anisfield Wolf scholar, Lisa Nielsen. And she is, this fall, launching the first Anisfield Wolf exclusive course. So her students who will be at this ceremony are studying these authors, reading their poetry, reading their essays, and then applying it to the 21st century questions in their own lives. At the campus of Case Western Reserve University, there is an influx of Chinese students. They pay full freight, and it causes some tension, and that is one of the threads that Lisa Nielsen takes up in the classroom, directly tied to Anisfield Wolf. Our libraries are one.
The Anisfield Wolf Award has an extraordinary history. You have a pantheon, including Martin Luther King, who won the award in 1959, and of course you've gone on to have Langston Hughes win it for Simple Takes a Wife, which was a wonderful, wonderful book. Malcolm X has won it. Alex Haley has won it. So what's next for the award? Where do you see? I know that you've got new boots on. You're just putting them onto the ground and walking around the hallways and saying, look at this gem. Look at this treasure that we have in Cleveland. What's next for you? What's your game plan for getting this literary icon to the pantheon that is so well-deserved?
Well, Kate, I'm looking forward to my first interview that doesn't start with, what an obscure but wonderful award. then I'll know some work has gotten done. We have many pots astir, and one I'm most particularly excited about is Edith was a trustee of the Cleveland Public Library, one of those great institutions that still serves millions of people a year, and it is the only venue that has every single book that has won. And I want the Anisfield Wolf Collection at CPL to become a destination for travelers, for school children, for thinkers in this realm, for scholars, to showcase it. It's a little bit under a bushel right now, to bring it out into the light. So I'm working with the administrators at the library to bring it out and perhaps even take it on the road through the Library of Congress. That's the blue sky goal in that direction.
That would be wonderful, and I wish you every success in doing that, and it's been a delight having you on the show. It's gone way too quickly. I wish we had more time to talk and, as you said earlier, become BFFs. It's just a lovely event. I know that you'll have a wonderful time. It's always wonderful when it's done, when it's completed. Because right now you probably have 17 million things on your mind. So I want to thank you for joining us today and for letting our listeners know more about what the Anisfield Wolf Book Award really is. And I congratulate you. I congratulate Laird Hunt and Kevin Powers and Andrew Solomon. And give my regards to Henry Louis Gates. Tell him that he's just a yeoman. He's just done some extraordinary things. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know before we close out?
I want to thank you for finding us and taking us seriously and doing your own homework and, you know, putting aside the cats to read. And I would suggest, if people are curious, they can find us on the web. We've put a lot of energy into a very beautiful website with all the covers, which shows another kind of history of art. And it's Anisfield, AnisfieldWolf.org. So that's Anisfield-Wolf.org. And you can take a deep dive into some of this literature that changed all our lives.
Right. And as we close up, tell us a little bit about who's going to be getting the Lifetime Achievement Award at this event this week.
It's so important not to neglect him. Wolle Soyinka is the first African to win a Nobel Laureate Prize in Literature. And before he did so, he won an Anisfield Wolf Award. He is a walking profile in courage, having tried to broker peace in the Biafran War in Nigeria in 1967 and 68, and ended up in solitary confinement for 22 months for his troubles, where he wrote on toilet paper a book that eventually came out as The Man Died. He's best known, though, for his plays and his beautiful memoir of his childhood, which is a classic now called Aki, A-K-E, The Years of Childhood, which was the book for which he won his Anisfield Wolf. And I would say, if you're not sure about someone who sounds so formidable, he has the lightest of touch. It's almost a Dalai Lama-like smile through his political acumen. He's engaged in politics all his life. And you can go to YouTube and type in Wolle Soyinka, S-O-Y-I-N-K-A, and the phrase Lost Poems. And there's a 2-minute video of him reading Lost Poems, which is about all our failing memories. And you will, I swear, be transported.
I'm sure he has a lovely and resonant voice. And I have to say that this has been more fun than God and the law allow. So I really enjoyed having you on the show. We've had Karen Long with us today, and we're so delighted. Thank you so much.
This has been Wordsmitten, brought to you by Florida Monthly Magazine. If you'd like to learn more about the people, the books, and the business of writing, get online to wordsmitten.com.